Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. As England reached their first major international final since 1966, all thanks to a dramatic night at Wembley, all will be discussed on this episode of the Game Euro 2020. And to help me through it all, Alison Rudd, Tom Clark and Gregor Robertson. How are you all?
Good, thank you, Hugh.
Cloud nine.
Well. Not quite an evening. Sure what to say. What a match.
I'm a little bit shell-shocked, to be honest. I mean, I'm like staring into space. This feeling is very unfamiliar. I don't know how to quite, you know, the first thing and I'm very negative, as you all know, and the first thing I said to my partner when she said, aren't you happy, is the first thing I responded with, I would have been okay losing a semi-final. I can't imagine how it's going to feel to lose a final. So gives you an indication as to how negative I am and immediately, you know, feeling the worst. But yeah, I will come round to tomorrow morning. I'm sure I'll wake up with a spring in my step. How are you feeling, Tom?
Similarly, unnerved. I think I said unnerved the last time and I'm still feeling that way. I think because of the nature of the game, it being quite tight and tense, and the longer it went on, you thought, surely not again. But actually, I thought England played quite well in that sense, and they did look like they were going to score. Obviously, the goal, which we'll come to, was slightly fortuitous in some senses, but they did look like the better team. I thought Denmark tired. And so in that sense, it was a relief when they scored rather than, oh my God, I can't believe they've scored. I think still settling into this idea that they're in a final. As Henry Winter has written in his match report that's on the Times website now, he's described it as the strangest, rarest and most beautiful of words to write. England are in a final. And I think he's got it right.
Alison, how are you feeling?
Well, I get what you're saying, Hugh. I think what you're trying to say is you could sort of spend your life being a wallflower and saying, no one's asked me to marry them. But is that worse than being jilted at the altar, which is what it's going to feel like if England don't win the final? You can get a sort of perverse sense of, well, we didn't care anyway if you get knocked out before the final, can't you? It's all very well the songs talking about how many years of hurt, but how many years of analysis, how many years of knowing how to slag off England and knowing what to say is wrong with them and what they need to do better and what kind of manager they need and what kind of system they should deploy and why the whole history of how we train and coach players has been wrong, from having muddy fields and booting it from the back to the front and not understanding and not being technical enough. And now we're having to say,
winter break.
Oh, they're all right.
Yeah, the old winter break argument.
Yes.
Well, I mean, look, at least, Alison, there is at least, as I said after the last match, now we're in a final, there's a new realm of montage that can happen. The BBC and ITV and all the TV channels, there's a new realm. There's the heartbreak in the final. We're in a new category now. That's exciting, at least. Whatever happens.
I mean, I think it's a huge night for the nation. I'm clearly older than I used to be, everyone is, but what I mean by that is I'm no longer a child with starry eyes looking up to football stars and wanting to be like them. I can now know that I was never going to be a player, and so I watched the England team from afar in a totally different sense. But I think the kids tonight who dream of being Harry Kane or Raheem Sterling, who were just about staying up past bedtime, would have had the absolute night of their lives when England scored. And I think that's massive for the country. And we spoke about it last night, you know, some of the individual players, the characters in the England squad as well. So many people that you can look up to if you're a youngster. And I think them getting to a final, those individuals getting to a final is massive for the country. How do you feel about it, Gregor, as a Scot?
That'll have to be framed in that context, you.
You frame it in your answers, to be perfectly honest.
I know. I made my case last night. Look, this is a very likable team, and I back up everything you've just said there. And I watched those scenes at the end and thought, I agree, this is a momentous occasion, a momentous time for this country, not just in a footballing sense. When something this big happens, it takes over the entire agenda, and that's amazing to live through, actually. Although I've been kind of sitting watching them on the TV with a 6-week-old baby crying in my lap, it's not really been the Euros of dreams for me. But this is a huge time for England. Having said all that, I feel equally as heartbroken for Denmark because of the way that they've gone out. I'm pretty astonished by the kind of lack of judgment. Astonished is the wrong word. I understand it because the euphoria of reaching a final is huge. But it was that was never a penalty kick in a million years. And England were the better team by some distance, but football games are won and lost on big moments. Spain were the better team against Italy. I think we can all agree on that. They were the better team over the 120 minutes. They probably didn't deserve to lose. They went out. The narrative is Italy are the warriors. Denmark were warriors tonight. And to go out like that in the kind of the journey they've had is tough. But putting all that to one side again, I'm very, very happy for England and for you guys and for the players and for Gareth Southgate. I said it last night. These guys are likeable and they've done something to kind of refresh what it means to play for England and to watch them. And the journey continues.
Do you feel like it was a big night for the nation as well, Alison?
Yeah, no, it was. And I have, yes, for lots of reasons. Let's include the pandemic in it. Proper crowds in the stadium, the biggest noise yet. And it was just terribly unlike most backing of England, which traditionally fans have been very quick to get on the back of an individual or several players or the manager when it's not gone right or they feel it's going wrong. There seems to have been a pact nationwide that Gareth Southgate is okay. He's done well enough. We can now just support whatever decisions he makes. I actually can't believe there wasn't a single raised eyebrow when Grealish was taken off. It was as if Southgate is now a proper football genius and everyone loves him. And that means you love everything he does. And that means you love the team and how he's moulded the team. And it does feel unifying, that sense of, I've not ever been aware of that buying in, completely buying in. You'd probably say that probably did happen in Euro 96, but I'm not sure it did in quite the same way. There were quite a lot of critiques. Some of them were quite cutting. So I think this is unprecedented. Everyone just going with the flow. And maybe given what the country has been through, that's what you get. You get people designed to focus on one thing. They focused on Emma Raducanu, first of all, and then she went out of Wimbledon, so we're going to focus on the England football team.
Tom, let's turn our attention to the evening and how it went. We've already spoken in small ways about the match itself, and we'll get to some of those big, big moments. But it almost had to be tense, didn't it? It was one of those that I think some football fans thought Denmark will beat them, it'll be comfortable, but it never really felt like that for those in the know.
No, it didn't. And I mean, I saw a few journalists tweeting during the game, obviously quite passionately and patriotically saying, is this a good game? I've no idea. And perhaps it's because I'm more cynical than most journalists, but I was able to judge it slightly dispassionately because I was working. And I thought it was a fantastic game. I thought Denmark were brilliant in patches, particularly for most of the first half. England did what they've done in a lot of games and started quite well, quite brightly, and then kind of sat off a little bit. And Denmark with Damsgaard were just superb, I thought, in the first half. And so it was a really tense, as you say, but really enthralling game. And I think England do deserve great credit for the way they bounced back after conceding that goal. There are a few images of Harry Kane doing the old Gary Lineker point to the head, let's keep our focus, lads. And that seemed to spark them into life a little bit. So I thought it was a really enthralling game up until some of the Danish substitutes I thought were quite strange and seemed to, you know, unhinge them a little bit, unpick them a little bit. And I thought it was interesting, again, to go to Alisson's point about Gareth Southgate, what a genius, is that he didn't make as many substitutions until right towards the end in extra time. And actually, whilst you could easily sit there and go, put Rashford on, put Sancho on, England looked the better team progressively as Denmark more changes and England stuck with what they were doing.
It was such a close game for me watching. I didn't really find it entertaining in that sense, but there was, I think, lots of nail biting going on where I was sitting. And a feeling that England should have been better. I've had loads of conversations, I think we all have throughout the evening with friends, some feeling that I had a friend that was saying England should really be playing Denmark off the park, and I had to reel out all the stats of all the matches they've played against one another since 2002 and how it's never really an easy game. They made five changes in normal time. Gareth Southgate made one. They had fresher legs, but we had the quality still to come off the bench. It was a game of chess. It was cat and mouse. It was intriguing from that respect. Gregor, you are a neutral, unlike the rest of us. How did you find the match?
I thought it was very entertaining. I thought, I agree, there were periods of the game where it was a little bit cagey, but there were also periods when it was pretty open and end to end. And what you're saying is true. Denmark definitely tired, but England had 58% possession. You know, they had more of the play. They made Denmark work for large periods of the game, and they definitely grew it. And you know, even when they got the penalty, and even if they hadn't got that penalty, I believe probably England would have found a way. They were definitely knocking at the door. Raheem Sterling again taking it upon himself, taking responsibility, going at people, going, you know, just doing it for England. He was superb. I thought it was really entertaining. I thought it was, you know, as you say, as a neutral, I was slightly less nail biting going on in my house, but it was, I watched it and thought Denmark as well. I've got serious balls. Like they were really, you know, fighting for each other, organised. I say it again, it's a really tough way for them to go out after the way they've played in this tournament. There wasn't too much between the teams. But England, you know, on the whole, I think, you know, you could say they deserved it in the end.
Let's just remember Denmark are a tenth of the size of England. It's, you know, it was proper David and Goliath stuff, really. And they deserved a lot more from the coverage, really. They deserved to be told, maybe Denmark television were telling their people that was not a penalty. I mean, I've looked at it 10 times and there is no contact. Peter Walton was saying on ITV, oh, remember, it has to be a clear and obvious error to be overturned. And that's missing the point completely. If there's going to be VAR, it's to pick up those moments where it's a trick of the light, the angle's wrong for the referee, and he should hold his hand up and say, oh, you know, from my angle, I thought there was contact. I'll go to the monitor, have a look. Oh, I can see there's no contact, no penalty. All the plaudits we've had for it being run better, the VAR, it just didn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it in real time and thought, I thought there was penalty in real time. And then you watch your back. So, you know, it's not a slight of the referee necessarily. But as you have said, to give you your due, Hugh, throughout this tournament, it's a waste of time. That is a clear and obvious error because there was no contact. And then, you know, you hear commentators tried to say that Jensen coming in from the side kind of grazing his hip was enough. Maybe he's given it for that. It was pretty perplexing. And even in the aftermath, there's no one really willing to say that. I understand. This is a moment of euphoria. It was a shocking decision, and I really, really feel for Denmark. I have to say that.
I wanted to do the positive points, the two goals before we came to the penalty decision, but we might
late,
as well.
Too late.
We might as well dive into it while we're here, and we'll talk about the two goals that preceded it a little bit later on. I've told you all throughout that eventually there was going to be a major decision from, because the thing is, you can't do VAR half-hearted. It can't be this sort of light touch VAR. Like, if it's there, use it. If it's there and you're not going to use it, it's always going to have errors like this. I'm not saying that the referee doesn't give that penalty if he goes over and has a look. But there is no reason in a game of this magnitude, while half the world is watching on, not to go over to the screen and make sure you're giving the right decision. None. There's none. And UEFA can say, we don't want to stop the game constantly. Well, you haven't stopped the game constantly. You're in extra time now and you've given a penalty. This is the occasion that it's okay to have a look. Doesn't matter which countries are involved. You need to make sure that you're making the right decision. And for whoever sat in the VAR box, not to say to the referee, you might want to have a look at that again. I just think it's utterly disgraceful. And I know it's gone in England's favour, but you all know I like watching football for a reason. I'm not just an England fan, I'm a football fan. And I want to see two sides go out there, give their absolute best. And I don't want to see it decided by a terrible decision. In my opinion, that was a god-awful decision. But it's even worse when the referee doesn't go over and have a second look, you know. And ultimately, they said they wanted it to be about the referee on the pitch making the decisions. For me, the VAR official just basically saying, well, look, he's made one decision. This is what it is. It's going to stand. There's nothing clear and obvious. I mean, firstly, I think that in itself is an error. But I can't believe that if you've got VAR there that you wouldn't use it. I've said it before for red cards. I think if you're going to give a straight red card, go and have a second look. I think if you're going to give a penalty and decide a semi-final European Championship, go and have another look. It's quite simple.
Here, 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 here. Clear miscarriages of justice. The point is you don't want people leaving the stadium or turning their tellies off thinking, well, that was wrong. That was inaccurate. Why isn't there a way of making sure we know whether the ball crossed the line or not, or whether it was a penalty or not? I know we'll invent VAR. And then when it comes to an incredibly huge moment, we'll ignore it. Bizarre.
But I think it comes from just trying to not disagreeing with you, Hugh, here. I'm really not, because I think you make a good point and you've obviously been very adamant on this throughout the tournament and you've been proved right in this sense. But it comes from all the constant forensic analysis, which, you know, was where VAR was born from, the desire for everything to be absolutely right. Managers saying, this has cost me my job, this has cost us the game, et cetera, et cetera. And so the implementation of VAR, what came with it was this kind of forensic over-analysis. And then we had the reaction to that was so negative and, oh, you're killing the game, let it flow, et cetera, et cetera. And I can remember me being on the podcast earlier in the tournament and praising the referees for letting things go and saying, isn't it great that they're being quite decisive? And I wonder whether that's almost got to them so much and been such a desired focal point for the refereeing of this tournament. Be decisive, be the leader on the pitch. You know, let's really try not to go to the screen on the side of the pitch, that it's almost gone too far the other way now. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying that's the reason, but I'm just trying to work out whether that's why, stood on the pitch, the VAR said, nah, probably not worth it. Stick with it.
I would still praise the referees for letting... I think refereeing has been, broadly speaking, has been good. I've enjoyed that there's been tackles going on, and sometimes you think, oh, he's going to give a free kick there. Not that you'd want it. And he's let the play go. There's a number of instances that happened tonight, in fact. Yeah. He thought... Oh, he's letting the game go. And, you know, I think this is a bit of a throwback. This is good. This is good for the entertainment, for the spectacle. But none of that matters when there's a blatant mistake and you have the opportunity to change it. So like that's where VAR is making, if there's a clear error, a clear miscarriage of justice, and they have the opportunity to make it right, then not doing so is baffling. So it's nothing to do with the referee. And as I say, I watched it in real time and thought that was a penalty kick. So I don't blame the referee. I blame VAR.
Look, like I say, England go through, so we get here. Yeah. We get to sit here and reflect on the positivity of that happening. But I think if it was the other way around, like I tweeted a little bit earlier on, our media is acting like it's an international incident. Frankly, you know, genuinely, I can't see. We would have lost our minds. Tomorrow we would be talking about UEFA. Please replay the game. Get Denmark back. I'm being deadly serious. I mean,
No, I'm just trying.
Speaking of montages,
I'm just trying not to think of it because it's too much. It's too much.
That would have been on the montage, wouldn't it?
And I agree with Alison. I thought it was sad, for our broadcasting, not all of it, because I hear that there have been comments on the radio that said penalty should have been overturned. But from what I saw on TV, to sit back and hear ex-England international saying, one, I don't care. Another saying, I'll take it, as if they're stood in the pub, and not give the respect to Denmark that I think they deserved for their performance throughout the competition. And simply the incident in itself, which I thought was incredibly harsh, to sit back and say there's no point discussing it because it's gone in our favour. Again, you know, we were talking about English arrogance all over social media today. I mean, talk about underlining it.
I was just going to say, it's difficult, isn't it? Because for terrestrial TV broadcasters on the biggest moment of the summer, and, you know, I'm sat here and I can hear cars beeping their horns outside and like people going absolutely mad. My 22-year-old sister, who's never really paid attention to a football game, despite me dragging her to Lincoln games throughout her life, messaged me at full time being like, get in. You know, I just doesn't really know what it means, but just that it's brilliant. And so, you know, thank God we're here to analyze it in a more forensic manner. But I think, you know, we can be the voices of reason. We can pay tribute to Denmark and we can criticize the VAR. But I do understand where that kind of euphoria comes from, because there's also in a sense of, my God, isn't it marvelous?
And before anyone blames me, just remember, I wanted to talk about all the positive things first. You took me into the penalty before I wanted to talk about all the brilliant things. So, no, I wanted to start by Damsgaard's free kick, because it was incredible. And I was like, what a goal, and I screamed. And then my partner came running in and said, why aren't you celebrating more? And then she looked at the screen and went, oh, Denmark. But it was such a great goal.
I could quite easily be the get negative here again. I think Pickford... I think all the positive things we were seeing about Pickford, about him being much calmer, have started to go out the window in the last two games. He's looking a little bit panicky again. So, look, it was a wonderful strike. The two things can be true. It was a wonderful strike, and he should have done better. There you go.
I'm not having it. A wonderful strike. And I agree, he is looking a bit more fidgety and Pickford-esque. Yeah. In the last few games, there was the moment against Ukraine. There was a couple of dodgy clearances, but I'm sticking by him. Golden glove, goalkeeper of the tournament.
You rolled the ball straight out to a Denmark player earlier on.
Yeah, all right. Look, we all have our moments, okay? Leave the guy alone. I'm not having that he should have stopped that free kick. I think Denmark did a very clever thing with the wall where they moved to block his view. I mean, I don't really know why England had about four or five players in the wall when the ball was about 32 yards from goal or something. I'm not having that he should have stopped that. It was an unbelievable strike. And just very quickly, while we're on Denmark and on the subject of goalkeepers, how good is Kasper Schmeichel, by the way? Lee Dixon on commentary referred to him as one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League. The guy's one of the best goalkeepers in the world, isn't he? Like, he's unbelievably good. He's superb. I mean, and I hate to be the guy who tweets something and then says it on a podcast, but is it just because he plays for Leicester that he's unbelievably good? That save from Maguire was like superb.
I don't mean this to be disrespectful to Leicester fans, but I was amazed about three seasons ago that he wasn't bought by, you know, one of the teams that was regularly in the Champions League then. Don't worry, he's doing it now, and he's a Leicester City legend, and he's exactly where he needs to be. But, you hear all these clubs talking about we need a new goalkeeper, and it's so rare that Kasper Schmeichel is one of the ones mentioned. He's so consistent. He's been unbelievable. The first goal was incredible, and Jordan Pickford, you know, I'm 50-50 on that one. But Alisson, you must have been, in a small way, happy to see that free kick go in, because... you know, you did call early on that Denmark were the dark horses.
Yeah, I did. And so I was pleased it went in, absolutely. Football first, nationality second. but I think in this tournament, what we've discovered is the football gods decided as a joke they weren't going to allow any goals direct from free kicks. And so, but they were going to have a lot of fun with own goals. Anyway, they must have been making some sandwiches or something, because a beautiful goal is scored and they think, oh, no. And so they make sure the very next goal is an own goal. And I think that underlines what Tom was saying about Schmeichel. You know, he was beaten by something he could not have saved. You know, that cross came in and his captain sort of bundles it in because there's nothing else he can do. It's sort of from a Denmark point of view, it's sort of freaky, really. There's nothing Schmeichel could have done. And then when he's asked to save a penalty, he does. So it's like you know, he is probably man of the match. And if you're man of the match at semi-final level as a goalkeeper, then you have every right to have people speculating whether you might be one of the best goalkeepers in the world. He certainly does lift his game for the big moments. I've seen Kasper Schmeichel make mistakes, but when it matters, he rarely does, actually.
The fact that he was man of the match also tells you that England, you know, were the better team. Like we have
they
to,
were. Yeah.
They were the team who took it to Denmark, like, you know, took it to the opposition far more. Denmark had spells and they were real threat in the break, particularly in the first half. There were some spaces England were leaving kind of either side of the centre halves. Denmark, you know, they rode an early storm because England were excellent at the start, and then they grew into the game and you know, they had some really good spells. But England over the piece were the better team. There's no two ways about that.
Time for another positive, Hugh. I feel like you should have like a little horn or something, like positive horn, you know, just to make sure listeners know that we're not all doomed. No, I'm not saying you are. I'm not saying you are. We're all in this together. We're one happy
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Team on the game podcast. But another positive, Kyle Walker. How good is that guy? If there's one thing I want to come from the final, it's Kyle Walker in a race with that little remote control car before kickoff from one end of the pitch to the other. That would be brilliant, wouldn't it? The guy is absolutely lightning quick. He's so important to that England defence. Gregor, I'm not getting this wrong, am I? As in terms of recovery runs,
yeah,
as a fullback, I mean, I've heard that you were fairly slow as a player. Playing alongside a guy like that. I mean, that's just what I've heard. It's just what I've heard. Playing alongside a guy like that must be an absolute blessing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The one in the first half when he recovered, I think it was Damsgaard, was through. He's just, you know, sometimes, you know, a player's running at him and he can almost show them the whole touchline and give them a couple of yards, say, hey, on you go, I'm daring you almost to try and beat him. It's just such an asset. So he's not really, you know, there's a small period, we're being hypercritical here, a small period in the first half against Ukraine where he looked a little bit wobbly, but apart from that, he's been one of England's best players this tournament, and undoubtedly. And I'd say Harry Maguire again, he looked like a leader at the back. So yeah, there was some really big performance from England, absolutely. I think they showed the strength and depth too. There was the players that came on, Grealish, Foden, you know, they just got a little bit of class, a little bit of extra that you know, could make the difference for them in the final too.
I think there were so many standout performances. I think Raheem Sterling for England was brilliant as well. Calvin Phillips had another very, very good game. Look, I want to look ahead to the Italy game in a little bit. I should have mentioned this a little bit earlier on. There were also two balls on the pitch when the penalty was awarded, but I'm not going to say any more about that.
Was there?
Kane,
good,
yeah, there were.
Good spot.
In fact, Raheem Sterling dribbled past it. It was on the pitch for about a minute before the penalty was awarded. But, you know, who needs VAR to iron these things out? I thought Kane was more himself tonight. He played a big part in the equaliser, dropping deep. He played the ball through to Saka, who, of course, crossed. And it would have been tapped in by Sterling had it not been turned in by the Denmark defender, Kjær. But I think if he can play that well again, it was no frills, but I just think he was tenacious. He was there in the box. He couldn't quite get his shot off so many times, but he was in the right position to score a goal. And I think if he does that in the final, then I think England have a great chance. Tom?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that first goal, because I was watching and there was a moment about 2 or 3 minutes before that goal where Kane came all the way into England's half to pick up the ball and Kjær came all the way with him. And I was thinking, is he man-marking him all game? And he wasn't, but just in that moment, he followed him all the way into England's half. And then a few minutes later, Kane dropped deep again and Kjær didn't go with him. And Højbjerg kind of nearly picked him up, but didn't quite. And he played that ball through for Saka. And as you say, that's more the Kane we've seen this season. And I think it's interesting the reverting back to Saka, because I think with having Saka and Sterling, that version of Harry Kane is what you can really get something out of. When you've got those two players making runs in behind, when you've got the Harry Kane, the recent Harry Kane, the cultured, dropping deep Harry Kane, that's when, you know, those two things, those pacey players running in behind, really hurt teams. And it'd be interesting to see, because obviously a lot was made about Spain not playing strikers up against Chiellini and Bonucci, playing players who were dropping into that space and saying, do you want to come? Do you want to come and follow me? Or do you want to stay where you are? That was where Morata's goal came from him dropping deep and playing a 1-2. It'd be really interesting to see, A, how Italy try and combat that, and B, if Gareth Southgate says to Harry Kane, get in that pocket every single time.
2-1 up. Jack Grealish was taken off, having been brought on a little bit earlier on. I loved this from Gareth Southgate, Alison. I loved it because the human waistcoat was back. You know, he backed himself. He went, why do we need a third? We've already won. We're better than these lot. Let's see it out now. And he brought on Kieran Trippier and he took off Jack Grealish. And look, that smacks of having a plan. And that's the thing that we were worried about coming into this competition. He now knows his own mind. Are you confident he will have a plan for Italy as well?
Yeah, of course he'll have a plan. I'm pretty confident it'll be a relatively negative one as well. I mean, he's not... It could be a really boring final, I think. I think Italy will be aware of the role that England are on and the passion in the stadium, and that, you know, what should they do? Absorb probably and try and catch on the break, assuming that the home team attack. But I think England will be thinking, we're not going to fall into that trap. There's going to be quite a lot of defenders with not very much to do for a bit in that game. I mean, I just think it's astonishing he took Grealish off. It can only mean that the morale in the camp is absolutely top notch, because it's the sort of thing you could do that could create a rift or make people think, well, that's a bit cruel. Nor in normal football, if you bring on a beloved attacker and then haul them off because you think you've got the only goal that you're going to need, it's just seen as ruining a player's confidence or having, you know, repercussions for the next match or so on. It is breaking convention to do that a bit, and it really does pigeonhole Grealish as having a very specific niche role in the team, which is to win unsettled a tired defence and win free kicks and just rattle things up a bit. And then if you get a goal another way, fine, then you can, you know, you don't need him anymore. And Jack Grealish is so much more than that. So I don't know. They're the sort of things that in normal times would would make you think, has he lost the plot? But because he's now been given this godlike role, it doesn't matter. I find it astonishing, really. But I mean, it has to be indicative that everyone's buying into everything him and his backroom staff are doing.
It is astonishing. You're right, Alison. But he is quite boring tactically, Gareth Southgate, but he is also breaking convention, as you say. He's not just taking off Wonder Boy Jack Grealish. He's trying two or three different formations, teams, changing his team every other knockout game in a tournament. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he had something else up his sleeve. Marcus Rashford's going to start against Italy, against the old lads. Knock it in behind. Get him in behind. Play the ball over the top. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer style. Who knows? It's exciting. Who knows what Gareth's got up his sleeve?
I did want to ask this question because it was asked on TV, and as far as I was concerned, all of the answers were totally unsatisfactory. So I figured you three would be able to answer it. It was, what was the reason that England persevered tonight? And I thought it was a really interesting question, Mark Pugat. You're a legend of the game. So I've stolen it. And the reason, Gregor, that I think I wanted to ask this question was everything that was said about England in that answer, you could have said about Denmark. And that's the reason I wanted to find the 5% that made England the difference, because I think England were better. But I think everything that I heard about them tonight, you know, the character that they showed, you know, the determination that they showed, you could have easily said about their opponents, it was that tight a game for me. But I do think there was something different about this England team, whether it was just quality off the bench in the end that was the major difference, I don't know. But I do think England outplayed them. And I'm not an ex-footballer. I wondered what you thought.
There's not a great deal between these teams. That's fairly obvious to say. I think England have had players like Raheem Sterling who took responsibility, big game players who made the difference. They really did. I don't think it was like, you know, there wasn't a tactical masterstroke by either manager. Both teams played pretty much how we would have expected them. They both had spells when they were in the ascendancy, but when it mattered, England had more quality. They had individuals who could do something to win the game. And, you know, although it wasn't a penalty, I've said this already, Sterling kept taking it upon himself, kept taking the responsibility, kept going, trying to go beyond players. And I don't really think that Denmark had that player. They didn't have that player of that kind of quality, I don't think. So, look, such fine margins. This is tournament knockout football. There were very fine margins, and England came out on the right side of them tonight.
Tom, what can England take from today and the fact that they managed to fight their way through into a massive final against Italy?
I don't know whether they take anything necessarily new other than being unshackled from the burden of finally making a final. I think, as Gregor said about the fine margins, that's what's interesting about this England team. And that's perhaps where Gareth Southgate deserves credit. Because when you think about this tournament, I mean, look at Italy. It was a tight game against Belgium. They beat Spain on penalties. Spain themselves came through against Switzerland on penalties. There's been lots of tight games. England, yes, we'll all remember that Germany game and the euphoria of the final 20 minutes and scoring those two goals. But that was a really tight game. Really tight, really close. And I mean, other than England beating Ukraine, I can't really think of too many games, even in the group stages, where it was like people being blown away. So maybe it's just the reassurance that the way they've done it so far is right. And that gives the squad, the starting 11 and Gareth Southgate, that we're here on merit, and whatever system we pick to try and combat Italy will be the right one for us, because everything they've done so far has paid off. I mean, even going back to the group stages, sorry, just, you know, we're talking about that Scotland game and being like, oh God, it's all horrible, it's all nightmare. That was partly because we kind of thought we should be beating Scotland 3-0. Sorry, Greg. Scotland played really well. England were really tight. Southgate was like, let's get a point, let's qualify, job done.
But England have yet to play a team of Italy's calibre in this tournament.
Do you not think Germany...
In terms of who they were expected to... that would be expected to, you know, in terms of results and ranking and form and home advantage, or putting everything together, Italy's the first team that the bookmakers might say they're better than England.
But England are fourth in the world. I don't think you can get to the final of the Euros and say that they've not played a team. You know, you can only beat what's put in front of you. I know that's a cliche, but it's the truth. And yes, Germany are not the Germany of old. Denmark were a very, very good team. And but yesterday, I think they ranked 10th in the world. Yes, Italy have been the best team in the tournament. Some people could feasibly argue that England have now, but Italy, I think, have been the most entertaining and the most resolute, the most complete looking team, really, in the competition. So this is undoubtedly their biggest test, and it'll be fascinating to see how they come out of it.
I think from that point of view, we can probably all agree that it's, you know, obviously we all enjoyed Denmark's story, Alison, you're quite right, and they've been absolutely fantastic. But this is the best two teams in the final, isn't it?
Just.
Well, that's a good thing, isn't it? It's great. There's another positive. Ding. Wrap that up, you. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I've got views on Euro 2020, which I think I'll leave for after the tournament to be finished, frankly. But let's look ahead to Sunday generally. And Alison, I wanted to ask you about the next few days before we end the podcast, what we're about to experience, because it's going to be something that many people, you included, have never experienced before. It's going to be absolutely mad, isn't it? Wall to wall for the next few days, everywhere we look. Even more so than it already has been.
Possibly scarily so. I mean, I love football more than a lot of people, but I sometimes want to turn on the radio and not hear someone phoning in from Torquay saying their cat's wearing a collar with a St. George cross on it and where's their lucky sock gone?
Has my uncle been on the radio again? For God's sake.
I can take much more of this sort of sense that, you know, so many people, they have no joy in their life other than if England were to win. And I just find that slightly strange that we all go about our lives and have our own parochial clubs, whether it's rugby, cricket, football, whatever, and get involved and trot along every week and go down the pub and talk about what we talk about. And then suddenly it becomes this, I need England to win. I find that rather strange, really. And I find it slightly scary. And it taps into other elements of jingoism and nationalism, which I don't like at all. And I would rather people took joy from hosting, we are effectively now hosting the tournament, took more joy from that than the idea that it says something about us as people, whether we win or not. I find that leap very peculiar. So I will find the build-up rather difficult, actually, because it will be insane and it will be illogical and it will be feverish and it probably won't have much basis in the sense of what football is. It'll just be, if we're not careful, it'll just be far too jingoistic, and I don't like that at all.
Gregor, what do you think? Will it be?
I mean, well, I agree with some of that. I think we're verging on being too cynical here. I think we're seeing that international football stirs emotions and passion and togetherness that no other form of football does quite the same. And, you know, that's a joy to behold, even though, you know, it was very brief for my lot. You know, living in this country, I think it's going to be, yes, there's going to be some hysterical, over the top, you know, insane build up. But when the game arrives, that's going to be a moment when well over half the country is joined together with one kind of hope and aim and desire. And that's I think that's still pretty special. There's not many things in the world that can do that. There's not many things in life that can do that. I've seen that to my girlfriend earlier. I think, you know, probably like a royal wedding or something. What else apart from England gets half the population?
Oh God, don't bring the royals into it, Gregor. Bloody hell. One minute you're supporting England, next minute you're bringing the royals into it. What's happened to you? Who are you?
Trust me, I've never been someone to sit there and watch a royal wedding. I'm just saying that there is another half of the population who would sit down and watch the royal wedding. But and I read that in the paper. That was a throwaway comment. I couldn't even be certain that's true. You know, Matt Lawton said that told us the TV statistics last night. It was like the biggest event of the year. So that, I think that's still pretty special, and it's going to be, it's whatever the result, this has been a huge leap forward for England.
Tom, what's the maddest thing someone's going to do in the next few days regarding the football? I think someone's probably going to jump out of an aeroplane with no parachute and land on a trapeze net. And if they're nearer the England flag than the Italy flag, then that means England are going to win, or someone's magical pigeon's going to fly somewhere and predict that that if they land in Italy rather than somewhere in Gateshead, then that means that Italy are going to win it. And there's going to be something silly, isn't there?
I'm on board with the magical pigeon. What would he be called? Paulie or something like that? There'll be some bad tattoos going on tonight, won't there? And over the coming days, there'll be bets made with friends. Particularly, you know, there's going to be a frantic scampering for all sorts of tickets now, aren't there? When the tickets, I think, go on sale tomorrow. Lots of my friends who were lucky enough, a couple of them who were lucky enough to go to the game tonight, immediately when I said, oh, how was it? What's it like? Yeah, pretty good. I think we deserve to win. Anyway, 10 a.m. tomorrow. Here we go. Let's do it. You know, that there's going to be lots of that going on. Oh, can I have a ticket? Oh my God, yeah, you can definitely. I'll pay for a holiday. Amazing. There'll be lots of promises made. There'll be lots of bets made. And there'll be lots of regretting, I'm sure, come Sunday when England win. And there'll be lots of bad promises have to be kept.
And there's going to be lots of, it's coming home.
Well, it is coming home. So we can finally celebrate. It's on its way home.
We'll
there's one stop left
podcast,
on the train,
right?
Gregor.
Do you think we can retire that song if they win? Because, I mean, that's a serious bonus, isn't it?
It might become the national anthem if they win, to be perfectly honest. It might never go away.
Am I allowed to say that? Does that bar me from any football podcast ever if I say that out loud?
No, not for me.
You'll still let me on. Cheers.
I will. I will let you on in the coming days because there'll be plenty for us to discuss in the game podcast. And I'm sure Tom Clark will be back alongside Alison Rudd and Gregor Robertson. Thank you for being with me for the past 50 minutes or so. We've got more to come. We will preview the weekend's football a couple of days, I think, out from what will be a huge event for all England fans. The final of Euro 2020. Gareth Southgate's three Lions are there. They'll be taking on Roberto Mancini's Italy. Loads more great content to come in the Times and the Sunday Times as well. So make sure you're subscribed. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/thegame to begin your free trial. We will see you soon.
Cue a little bit of Neil Diamond and a little bit of Jerusalem.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.